I'm Joanna Shanks.
I'm Emma Taylor.
And this is Murder, She Spoke. Ran a 5k yesterday because some idiot nominated me and I felt obliged to do it. I just was so tired this morning. I really struggled to get up. I did it. I'm really pleased. Yeah, it's done. So
I don't love running. I'm quite happy with pretty much all other forms of exercise, but running is not my friend. I've done a 5k before. I've done half marathons where you kind of walk and run them, you know, the moonwalk, things like that. But I if a murderer was chasing me, I'm done, basically. So yeah, I just don't like it. I hate it. I'm asthmatic. I'm not built for it. I'm short. I've got short legs. I'm chubby. Like, I'm just not built for running at all whatsoever. So unfortunately, it's not really my thing.
I never enjoyed running, and because obviously Kerry's been here and we've been going out and running together, I've actually started to enjoy it for the first time in my life.
See, and I think I've always called bullshit on people when they say that, so the fact that you're
so
saying
did I you know, when it gets a bit cooler but the sun is still there, it's a beautiful time of night, which is really pretty. I have company, it's just nice. And then we're setting goals and we're trying to beat them. Whereas whenever I've done anything like that before, I've always done it on my own because I've never had someone who's like consistently keeps it up with me.
I mean, Richard runs, but he's 6 foot and has been doing it for years and years and years, so it would be completely ludicrous me trying to go for a run with him. It'd be like a St. Bernard with a dash round, do you know what I mean? It would just be ridiculous. So there's no point. And plus, I'm pretty good at other stuff, so I do get my exercise.
Play to your strengths.
Exactly.
I've started picking up some core exercises that Alice Living's doing.
Oh, great.
Because my core is my biggest weakness and I'm sick of this little paunch that I've got, like my lower abs that I've had for as long as I can remember, my whole life, that's just there and it really annoys me. And I thought, you know what, I'm gonna do something about it. I'm gonna strengthen my core because it'll
women are meant to hold some fat there to protect their organs, you know, protect their ovaries and their uterus and things like that. So it is possible that you may not lose every single part of it unless you go on some kind of extreme starvation diet, which obviously we do not recommend.
I do want to just strengthen up and stuff, to be honest. Just get in a bit better shape, get a bit more core strength, because I would actually like to confidently do a handstand, but I've been running and stuff, so I've not.
You can't do it all, or your body will just be shot. You know, you need to give yourself a little bit of a break as well.
Exactly.
That's my excuse for drinking for most of the weekend. Yeah, I've got to give myself a break. You know, I've got to take it easy.
So I started doing yoga last year, and I hadn't done any over the winter because I just hibernate and gain weight in the winter, and I picked it up again recently and I was really surprised at the strength and the flexibility that I had. Silly things like just going straight into a downward dog and having my heels on the floor.
Yeah.
I've obviously done some good and stretching my hamstrings. I've always had tight hamstrings and doing that, and it feels really, really good. So I'm going to keep that up.
It's just hard to convince yourself sometimes when you're in pain, or you know, if you've done a stretching session, you find it really hard. I think the next time you're like, oh god, here we go again. But actually, you're right, it gets easier every single time. But
the stretching and the yoga is actually great because it really complements the running, because I get a lot of problems in my groin. So actually doing all the like the split zap and all
the
exercise for that
groin there, it's quite amusing. quite a lot.
How did I say it? Groin. Irish person seeing ground.
Those things where people do it with a Scottish accent. So that's why I think it'd be funny if like lots of people from different places start listening to this, because I don't think you or I have a particularly strong accent, but I'm very sure other people will. I think we've both got quite easily
neutral.
Yeah, I would say so. But who knows? Maybe not. There's probably weird things that I say, little kind of colloquialisms and strange little phrases that we come out with. Definitely just things like we and I, they're just part of your day-to-day language. you forget that not everyone speaks. Even my family, my English family, take the piss out of me a lot. And they say that I sound really Scottish, and I don't think I do. I like it. I like having a Scottish accent. It's one of the sexiest, supposedly.
Really?
Apparently. I think they're talking about specific ones. I don't think they mean, like, Dundonian.
No offence to anyone from Dundee that might be happy to listen to this.
So, segue. I lived in Aberdeen for, I think...
You went to university there, didn't
you?
Yeah,
I went to university there. So I lived there for a while. So actually the case that I've chosen to cover today is set. So I went to study law with German law. I liked being in Aberdeen, but I don't think I really ever wanted to study law. It was one of those where I got the grades for it and it sounded good, so I thought I should go and do it. But I don't even think I was really ready to be let out alone as an adult, let alone study anything. It ended up just being a bit of a waste of time. But I loved Aberdeen and the people are great. It's probably the coldest place I've ever lived, not because the actual snow or rain or anything like that, but the wind just bites through you. Oh, it's horrific.
I found that about Edinburgh. Obviously, now that I live down in the south of England, it's great. And I'm very aware when I'm in Edinburgh, the wind chill factor. It's not that it's a particularly cold place, I don't think. It is just that wind chill. It just cuts through you like a knife. I actually had a friend who went to university in Aberdeen and I used to go up to visit her. I can't say I ever noticed it. So how long were you in Aberdeen for?
I think about 3.5 years in total. I had a great time. I made loads of friends and things like that, but I didn't really achieve much in my life apart from that. But sometimes it isn't about that. So, you know, finding your path or not finding it and then deciding to give up and start something new, which ended up working out much better for me. So, yeah. So I actually know some of the places, well, I know where this happened, essentially. So the case that I decided to cover is of the rape and murder of Jessica McGrath. So this happened in Aberdeen on February the 11th, 2016. Jessica was actually originally from Nigeria, so her legal name was Nkechi. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Her first name is spelled N-K-E-C-H-I, and her surname was McGrath. She was married, so she was 37 years old, and the majority of her family still live in Nigeria. I think she had two sisters and a brother. Her brother was living in Hong Kong. They were all sadly orphans when they were children. Don't have a lot of information on that, but then when she kind of got a Nigerian woman who she, I don't think was legally her mother, but she kind of adopted her as a mother figure, who was called Bimbo Owaye, which is an amazing name. So she was living in London at the time when this all happened, the adopted mother, and she was looking after Jessica's son. So Jessica seemed to move around quite a bit. She was traveling a lot. She was technically based in London, but from her Facebook page, you can kind of see she's all over the place. She's in Aberdeen a lot. She's traveling around the world. She's in first class, you know, airports. And she's kind of glamorous from her Facebook page.
What was it she did, or why was it she was traveling?
Well, this is the thing. At the time, she was telling people that she was doing hair extensions. And so she was, you can even see on her post, she's saying that she's going to buy stock from Budapest. And she'll post the pictures and there's like all these different bundles of hair. So it's real human hair. She was selling like Polynesian hair, and there are hundreds and hundreds of pounds just for the hair. And then you've got to get them either woven in, or you can get them made into a wig or whatever you want to do. There is a lot of money to be made in that. She also worked for high-end jewelers in Aberdeen as well. Essentially, at the time she was legally married, but she was estranged from her husband. So he'd met her in Nigeria. He was working in the oil industry. And he met her, I think it was about 2004, but they moved to the UK. They got married in Nigeria, and then they moved to the UK in 2005 and had a son together, who's called Sean, actually. He was roughly about 8 years old when she was murdered, unfortunately. So what Jessica's husband, friends and family all said to the media, the Jessica that they knew at the time, was that she was really religious and hardworking. She was self-employed. She had this lavish lifestyle, but they weren't actually entirely clear about the source of her income. It was a bit shady. She seemed to have too much money for the jobs that she was doing.
It sounded bizarre. You know, I know that you can probably make a few pennies from hair extensions because they are expensive to buy, and then you charge to fit them as well.
She's got pictures on her Facebook page and it's like Louboutin, Chanel shoes, Gucci handbags, everything's designer. She's in first class all the time. you know, her son's posing with Bottles and Loewy. It's just like, I'm not convinced that you could make that amount of cash. Maybe you can. Maybe I'm sure that like high-end hairdressers who work with the stars certainly do, but you get a vibe that she wasn't quite at that level. Some people also thought that she managed this high-end jewellery store and she had business cards mocked up. I did Google it. It does come up on Company's House, but it looks like it shut down in 2015. So I don't know if it was a real thing, or, you know, on Facebook, you can pretty much say you work for anything or anywhere.
You can create a profile and a personality on Facebook quite easily and say what you want.
I think social media is all about the facade sometimes. For some people, it can be that's the face that they're presenting to the world. And this, the one that she wanted was that she's this independent, self-employed, hardworking, globe-trotting businesswoman, basically. Really done up in her pictures, always with this beautiful lipstick done. She had these gorgeous lips, so they were always like bright orange or red. Hair obviously always looked perfect because that was, you know, part of what she was doing. But in the background, nobody knew that she was working as a high class escort as well. So she was a sex worker and she didn't want anyone to know what she was doing. So it's not really known how long she'd been doing it because she kept it secret from a lot of people. She had told a couple of friends that she'd been stripping and she'd made a lot of money through doing that. But once again, a lot of this is hearsay. It's after the fact. There's nothing really to evidence it. And a lot of these websites for escorting, they're quite dodgy. They don't use their own names. They don't give a lot of details out. They blur pictures and things like that. So whilst there have been profiles that have been linked to her, they can't definitely say that it was her. So she still does have a Facebook page. It's one of the In Memory Of pages. And from viewing her posts, she's very attractive, glamorous. She's traveled the world and she clearly adores her son. He's in a lot of her pictures. She certainly does reference the jobs that she said she was doing. So there's a lot of hair extension stuff. Even in like January 2015, just about a year before, she's posting a lot of pictures of hair extensions saying that she's gone to go and bought them. She's trying to sell them on there. She is definitely doing it as part of a job in some way. But she also references her Christian faith in a lot of her posts, and she seems to have loved spending time with her family and her friends. She did put a lot on there that kind of gave you a fully rounded view of her. And I do think that it's important in this situation, in this case in particular, to give a full understanding of who she seems to have been as a person prior to being murdered, because in the media, when a victim is a sex worker, that tends to overshadow everything else that they were.
Absolutely.
Just think it's really, really sad. That seems to be what everyone focuses on, and it kind of becomes their identity in the view of the media. So on the day of the crime, on the 11th of February 2016, there was a young man called Bala Chinda. He was age 26. He was also from Nigeria. And he was later, when this was all coming out, seen on CCTV walking towards a flat that she had rented in Union Terrace. Now, this is city centre Aberdeen. They're old properties, they're very expensive, but she was just renting them kind of a few days at a time. And so he was going there. 90 minutes later, both him and Ms. McGrath were seen again on CCTV getting into a taxi outside the flat. Taxi took them to Mr. Chinda's student accommodation in King Street, which is not a terrible area, but it's slightly out. I lived close to it in student accommodation. There's some lovely properties and there's some less ones. Student accommodation, it is what it is. They're probably pretty basic. And then the taxi took them back to her apartment. And the taxi driver later said that he overheard them discussing money when they were in the taxi.
Hang on a second. So they went from her apartment to his student accommodation, back to hers, and all in the same taxi.
All in the same taxi. Yeah.
So like they went to his to maybe get something.
Yeah.
Or do something.
That was what appears to have been the case. So yeah, the taxi driver heard them talking about money anyway, and then around 15 minutes later, Mr. Chinda was seen walking from Union Terrace, so just outside the apartment, to Union Street, which is the main, it's a bit like Princess Street and Inn, but it's the main street.
I know Union Street, that's where the bars and clubs and
exactly,
things are.
Yeah.
That's the main bit in Aberdeen, isn't it?
So she was staying really, really centrally. she was there to meet clients makes a lot of sense. And it was quite a nice apartment. Unfortunately, as the way these things go, when it was getting sold, it was all over the newspapers, so you could see inside the apartment where she died, which is really disturbing and upsetting.
So am I right in saying then that he was a client, or are we not yet sure?
He was a client.
So he was a client of the escort business?
He was indeed. So after they go back to her apartment, 15 minutes later, he leaves. He doesn't come back. Jessica's never seen alive again. The next day, her half-nude body was found in the bedroom of the apartment by the landlord of the apartment. So that was February the 12th. And she had been raped and asphyxiated to death. It was later determined that she was most likely smothered by forcing her face down onto the pillow and then being strangled with her own scarf.
Oh, that is awful. So the next day, her half-naked body was found by the landlord. Did the landlord have cause to go in? Like, was she maybe reported that she hadn't turned up somewhere or someone was concerned about her?
She had told someone that she'd only rented the apartment for 2 days. So I think that might have been when she was due to leave and then she didn't leave. It hasn't been specified anywhere in the news, but it would make a lot of sense just based on anecdotal things that people have said. A lot of this travelling around for the hair extension business, it later transpired she was seeing clients in different cities. So she'd stay maybe 2 or 3 nights in each place, rent somewhere really nice, and then she'd move on.
Like an Airbnb type
idea. She seems to have been quite high end. It was reported that she earned up to £2,000 a night. So the guys or whoever she was entertaining probably would expect her to have a fairly nice place to go to. So it makes sense that she would go somewhere like that. The police pretty quickly looked at CCTV and it was quite obvious that she was walking with this man, both to the taxi, then the taxi driver was corroborating that, then they had the CCTV of the taxi various ways along the journey, then on the way back. So it wasn't really incredibly difficult for them to find out. They found the pictures of him pretty quickly and then they just had to find him from there.
Can I ask a question? So she was in Aberdeen. She'd rented this property for a couple of nights. Am I right in saying then that she had travelled to Aberdeen specifically just for a couple of nights? She wasn't living there. She wasn't staying there.
She wasn't living there. No, not at that point in time. She was living in London and travelling around. So she was there specifically to meet clients.
But under the guise that she was doing the hair extension business. Okay.
Which for all we know, she may have been doing at the same time because it looks like she bought friends in Aberdeen and she has lived there on and off. It's hard to fully tell. We're kind of piecing things together from hearsay reports, then the actual evidence. I think especially because she was trying to hide this lifestyle, it makes it a wee bit more difficult. But we can presume that that's what she was doing. What he had done before he left her apartment, they say allegedly, but it seems highly unlikely to have happened any other way. Both of Jessica's phones were taken. And her keys, and they were disposed of somehow. It would appear he would be the person that has done that. Additionally, he got rid of his own phone and changed his phone number. Not really the actions of an innocent person.
Not suspect at all, is it?
So he'd actually only been in Scotland for a few weeks, commencing his studies at Robert Gordon University. So that's the other main university in Aberdeen. Yeah, it's a great uni. They do a lot of engineering-based degrees. And fairly quickly, when he was arrested, the media then found out that his father was a diplomat for Nigeria at the Beijing embassy. And it was all reported that he came from a respected and high-achieving family in Nigeria, whereas the contrast, the juxtaposition between him being reported as the diplomat's son and Jessica being literally called a hooker in the press is just shocking to me. So he was arrested and they took him in and then they did look into the evidence and there was a fair amount.
You said this was in 2016, am I right?
It was, yeah.
And they referred to her as a hooker in the...
In the Sun, I believe.
Well, that makes sense then. I was going to say, I cannot believe she was actually referred to as a hooker when describing her profession.
Yeah, hooker, gosh, just everything. All the slurs you can imagine were flung around in the British media, just completely unnecessary. because she was so much more than that. I'm very much of the view that sex work is real work. People do it for a reason. It's the oldest profession in the world. It's not up to me to judge other people's life choices, and there are many people who choose to be sex workers, and that is entirely in their rights. I think it should be legalized to protect them, and that's why I was so drawn to this case, because I'm just about to give you a reason where I think that she could have been saved if things were different in the way that society is, both now and then.
Now, I just want to take a minute to tell you about The Toolbox Scotland. They're located in Dalry in Edinburgh, a short walk from Haymarket. They sell loads, hand tools, power tools and garden tools at very competitive prices. They also have a website with free delivery on orders over £80. They sell a large range of brands, DeWalt, Craig, Makita, Stanley, Triton, Draper, Silverline, many, many more. They're open from Monday to Saturday if you want to stop by, or you can have a look online at their website, which is thetoolboxscotland.co.uk. That's thetoolboxscotland.co.uk.
So a fellow sex worker gave evidence that Jessica called her on February the 11th, the day of the murder, telling her that she had a client in the apartment who wouldn't pay her and wouldn't leave. So the friend didn't want to call the police because prostitution is illegal in Scotland, and didn't want to out herself or Jessica, and didn't want to get either of them arrested. Apparently there'd been quite a few high profile brothel busts in Aberdeen. Lots of people were being charged and going through that whole process. So a lot of the sex workers were quite scared, never wanted to report anything. And obviously, statistically, they're much more likely to have violence perpetrated against them, and yet they were still not wanting to call the police. So she called her friend, and then she actually called the guy that she was seeing at the time. So this is 21-year-old guy called Patrick Dignam. He didn't know that she was a sex worker. He just thought he was dating this lovely woman. I don't think they saw each other terribly often. So she tried to call him, and she was in hushed tones, saying that there was a problem. And she said something along the lines of, "A man from my motherland." And he could hear that there was a man in the background, and he was really upset, so he hung up on her. So she was trying to get help from two different people, and neither of them were able to help, but she obviously felt that she couldn't call the police either.
Sorry, did you not say she was married?
She was married, but estranged. They were separated, although he also didn't know that she was an escort. Right. And he went public afterwards, which I'll let you Google it and be the judge yourself, but I feel like he enjoyed the media attention, I think is fair to say. There was a fellow student of Bala Chinda who was on his course, which they never stated what course that was. He was an Indian national called Srinath Paladugu. He gave a statement to the police, I think it was the 20th of February, so what's that, 9 days after the day of the murder. And he told them that Bala had called him multiple times on the day of the murder and sent him a barrage of texts asking him for £300, saying it was an emergency, saying he needed help, begging him, and basically full-on harassing him, trying to get him to get in contact with him. He didn't help him, and he completely ignored the request for money and didn't want anything to do with it. He was like, not my problem, don't know what this is all about, don't want to know anything about it. Interestingly, when it came time for the court case to happen, he could not be found. He'd gone back to India and basically went to ground. And even though the embassy over there, they tried through various systems to get him extradited and come back and testify, and he just couldn't be found. So that's interesting. They did look at DNA evidence. There was DNA evidence linking Chinda to the crime scene. It was reported that he forced her to have sex without using a condom, so there was evidence there on clothing and various other things. The thing that made me really, really sad is that one of the main pieces of evidence that suggested that she'd been asphyxiated by having her face pushed down onto the pillow was that, I remember saying to you earlier, she had always had this beautiful makeup and her lips were always perfectly done. There was a perfect imprint of her lipstick on the pillow. The forensics suggested that she had just been pushed down, face down, and not moved. She wasn't able to move.
That's horrible.
Almost a perfect imprint of her lipstick is what they said.
That is absolutely horrible.
Terrific. She also had hemorrhaging and other implications that it was strangulation as well.
Decal hemorrhaging when they have the, it's like burst blood vessels in the eyes, yeah. Isn't it? That's usually an indication of asphyxiation.
So I think one of the main things that came out for me, I very frequently get upset by this when murder victims, their life is exposed, and it happens with everyone. You know, as soon as there's a rape and a murder, they delve into the victim's sex life and they delve into their background and have they ever done anything wrong, as if that's relevant, as if that means that in any way it's okay that you were murdered. They found all of these online profiles, and unfortunately her carefully hidden life was exposed to everyone that she knew and loved. People at her church, her family, her friend, obviously her husband, her son will now grow up knowing this. She did have these quite interesting online profiles. She offered customers the ultimate girlfriend experience. Kind of, I'll come to you and we'll have this wonderful time together, quite luxurious, you know, these beautiful apartments and this sort of thing. So it was very high end. It wasn't, I guess you can say sex work is seedy, it depends on how you look at it, but she was trying to give them a full experience, I think. And she was very classy and very interesting. And her husband actually said to the media, this is one of his interviews, he said she liked to be the centre of attention, but she wasn't a girl to put it about. She wasn't like that at all, never. When I met her, I don't think she had more than a handful of lovers in all her life. She wasn't cheap and liked her Gucci and Armani handbags. She loved the high life and wanted all her dreams to come true tomorrow. I knew what I was walking into, but I really cared for her. To my mind and hers, we were going to get back together at some point. I wanted it, she wanted it, so why not? But I only ever got half the story. I thought I knew her and it hurts. Which is sad. We don't know, obviously, if that would have ever happened. There was other reports that Jessica had told people she was wanting to marry her boyfriend that she was dating. So it's his word, but sad either way if you really felt that way. Ultimately, the jury did find Bala Chinda guilty of rape, murder and theft, because obviously he took the phones and the keys, and he was sentenced to life with a minimum of 18 years. Some of the things that I really struggled with throughout this, I found several Twitter threads based in Nigeria, some indicating that they felt if the crime had taken place there, Chinda wouldn't have been sentenced because the victim was a sex worker. And this was kind of echoed in the actual ongoings in the court. So the defence in the case implied that Chinda wouldn't have needed to rape Jessica. They said, why would he need to rape her as she's in the business? And like I said before, many newspaper headlines referred to her in really derogatory ways because of her line of work. I also saw a BuzzFeed article that you could probably Google and find, just saying that if Jessica had felt safe to call the police, would this even have transpired? You know, would she have even come to her dying? Because from the timeline, it looks like she called both her friend and her boyfriend prior to getting in that taxi to go with him. It looks as though he said, I can get some cash. Let's get in a taxi, go to my student accommodation. I'll get the cash. He's freaked out. He's not really known what to do. They've gotten back and that's been the outcome. So because prostitution is legal in Scotland, and by calling the police, she could have been arrested. She was too scared to call the police and her friend was too scared to call the police on her behalf. There is a Scottish charity that I found called Scot-PEP, P-E-P. I don't know what it stands for, but they campaign for sex workers' rights in Scotland. And they said that during the trial, it was highlighted that Jessica, when in fear of her life, had called a friend rather than risk calling the police. This is a heartbreaking detail in a heartbreaking case.
Couldn't agree more.
Horrific.
I'm really surprised that although this happened in 2016, which isn't that long ago, that the defence had the gall to say, well, why would he need to rape her? Because, you know, that was her business. What? Being raped? No.
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 Absolutely not.
No, that's not right.
No.
That's not accurate.
If you want to be more infuriated. When Chinda was being sentenced, this was what Lord Beckett said. And he did say a lot of really good, harshly worded, fair on the victim, explaining that, you know, a young mother had been taken from her friends and family and her son. However, this next part really, really irritated me. In your favour, and this is him sentencing it, in your favour, I take account of your having no previous convictions. I recognise that there will be a significant degree of isolation whilst you're in prison in Scotland, a long way from your homeland and your family, and I take that into account. So Jessica had family in London, all over the world, Hong Kong, obviously Nigeria. Her son has to grow up without a mother. He'll never see her again. All of her friends, all of her family, she was a very vibrant, very interesting, wonderful person. And yet, a rapist and murderer's feelings about being in prison are being taken into account. And she never had that same courtesy afforded to her.
Beggar's belief, doesn't it?
So yeah, 18 years he got the minimum that he'll have to serve before he'll be eligible for parole. And I just can't imagine how in any world 18 years is enough for doing that. It's just horrific.
Life in Scotland is 25 years normally, isn't it?
It is.
That's a life sentence.
And if you look at statistics as well, generally speaking, for crimes against sex workers, you do find that they get less time. It's completely disgusting. Everyone's life is worth the same as each other's, regardless of your profession. And it just really infuriated me. And I think also because because we've grown up in the age of social media, we do have access to Twitter and Facebook. And, you know, unfortunately, when people pass away, they do leave behind these digital imprints of themselves. Going and looking at her Facebook page is kind of eerie. She posts funny things, and there's pictures with her son, and there's joking about nights out, and she's got pictures of him with the moe, and, you know, she's going on the plane. And I just think you get a feel for who she is. And I don't feel that that was adequately portrayed by any of the media. I feel like it was all swept up in that, oh, she's a high-class hooker, this is how much she charged, this is what she promised, look at these sexy pictures she put online. When I think she's so much more than that. And that's why I thought it'd be interesting to cover this. Also, just the fact that he was portrayed as this diplomat's son, came from this amazing family in Nigeria. They were so high achieving. Oh, they're so amazing. And he ended up with what I would say is a pretty lenient sentence. Just tells you all you need to know, really. So that was my case.
That's quite sad that, like you say, when it comes down to a person has been murdered, someone who's loved by friends and family, and their worth is, you know, reduced down to the fact that they were a sex worker, referred to as a hooker in certain newspapers. And then it always seems to be the case that when these cases go to court, that's what they focus on.
And they denigrate them and they bring them down.
Yes. And also the defence will paint a picture, disregarding everything else, and really put that focus on the fact they were a sex worker. And they're just reduced to nothing, despite the fact that they are the victim in all this. They are the one that should be receiving justice. And to me, the Lord...
Lord Beckett.
...saying that, you know, taking into account the fact that he will be isolated from... Well, he was actually in Aberdeen on university.
He was there anyway, yeah.
Yeah. He came from Nigeria. He was at university in Aberdeen. He made that decision to be there. The fact that the judge is taking into account the fact that he'll be in prison, isolated from his family and far away...
Hey, frankly, you don't want to go to prison, don't kill someone.
Frankly, I couldn't give a shit. For what he did to her, I'm glad that there was a minimum sentence of 18 years imposed. But ultimately...
He's a piece of shit.
I'd like to see him serve no less than 25 years.
Yeah. I'd like to think that when it comes to parole, they'll look at how he tried to hide things. And the fact that he was, you know, so say he was asking his friend for £300 and then he can't find the money, he kills her. Is he killing her over £300? That just boggles my mind. I can't compute that in my brain.
No, I don't think so, because he raped her, didn't he? It would be different if he couldn't pay her, maybe he assaulted her and fled or something, but...
And he was refusing to leave the apartment before.
I don't think it has anything to do with it. I think he was a scumbag rapist,
yeah,
and murderer who thought a sex worker was possibly his best opportunity to exercise his horrendous urges, needs, however you want to label it.
I think the other thing that I found quite interesting when I was looking online is some of the misogyny that goes on in some of the Nigerian Twitter, saying that, and there's actually been some really good pushback as well. So if you Google it, there was a really interesting article that a guy had written saying that we treat these women as if they're nothing, and just because of what they do, they are worthless to us. They are utterly worthless, and we can't be like this. This is our, that's someone's mother or child or sister or whatever. I'm not hugely familiar with Nigerian culture, but it would be really interesting to look at it and see if there was anything about that. I don't know if they have different views maybe towards sex workers. That's certainly what it seemed to suggest from what I was reading online, and it was really quite disheartening to see that we've still not come that far even nowadays.
It would sound like it, and I wouldn't be surprised if they had
cultural differences.
Yeah.
In which case he might have seen her as worthless. Really sad that both of them came to a different country, probably for different things, wanting a new life, wanting to achieve different goals, and yet this is how it's ended up. But I still don't think that means he gets to have any leeway just because he's in a different country.
Well, that was horrendous. So maybe we should finish on a lighter note. I have been scrolling while we've been chatting because I completely didn't forget to get a true crime fact for this week. So this is a really short one. I cannot testify to its accuracy. However, it's funny, and therefore I'm going to claim that it is real, even if it's not. And I'm going to read it anyway.
Sounds good.
So, crime related fact. So this one's about terrorists.
So, I'm glad we're keeping it lighthearted again.
Yeah. While we're on a lighthearted subject. So apparently, Britain's Secret Intelligence Service, so would that be MI6? Or MI5? I think MI5 is United Kingdom, but MI6 is international, isn't it?
You know more about this than I do.
Okay. So Britain's Secret Intelligence Service once hacked an Al-Qaeda website and replaced the bomb instructions with a cupcake recipe.
Oh, I love that. That's so cute. I wonder if it was actually a good cupcake recipe, though.
I don't know if that's true or not, but I like it.
I've just got visions of them putting on their wee pennies. Oh, wait, pennies, people won't know what that is. Aprons. They're putting on their aprons and getting their baking gear out. Do you know what? A much more wholesome activity, and I highly recommend it. Don't make bombs, make cupcakes. I want it to be true. Based on the current climate, it would be better if they gave them banana bread recipe, seeing as that's all anyone seems to be making right now in lockdown.
Bananas are quite easy to come by as well.
And if anyone is looking for a banana bread recipe, Mary Berry's recipe is perfect and never fails me.
I can honestly say that, you know how I never used to be able to eat gluten, and now I can. But Mary Berry's recipes, it is well known within the gluten-free and celiac community that her recipes for cakes are perfect. If you substitute the flour, the regular flour containing gluten, in a Mary Berry recipe for gluten-free flour, they apparently always turn out really good. My sister once made me a birthday cake, and it was a chocolate cake with a really nice, lovely, rich chocolate icing, and it was gluten-free, and it was just a Mary Berry recipe that she'd swapped out the flour for gluten-free flour. So I can personally testify that
she's
it was
a national treasure.
It was fantastic, because actually gluten-free cooking can be really tricky because of the fact that you don't have the elasticity from the gluten. Yeah. And I've made an abundance of scones. I'm not alone in hating the taste of xanthan gum. It's got a horrible taste. It's almost got a consistency and you can taste it. Whereas if you buy Asda's own gluten-free flour, mm-hmm. it already has xanthan gum added, and it's the best gluten-free flour that you can use.
That's always good to know, because I'm sure there'll be someone at some point I'll need to cook for who's gluten-free. My panic buying flour arrived today, so I have like 15 bags of flour that arrived today. I better get baking.
You bought it through legitimate means, didn't you? You didn't
buy it
on the
dark web.
I did.
I didn't go on the dark web. No. Not this time. I might resell it on the dark web. Make a tiny profit. Sell it in tiny little bags, you know, like they sell drugs in. Sell it in those.
Although we're in quarantine, I know that loads of people have taken to baking, and the baking aisles in the shops have been absolutely ravaged. Yep. There's been nothing. I'm actually trying to avoid it because we've had Easter. I've got some post-Easter bargains in the fridge. Easter eggs, cream eggs, because we're never going to get Cadbury's cream eggs now until, I think it's January they come out. Yeah, yeah. And then they're only available until Easter, and then you don't get them again. But I am absolutely hoarding cream eggs at the moment, and I've forbidden Sean from eating any. I said, once these are gone, you won't be able to get them again until potentially January, so you're not allowed to eat them. So
you eat them, I kill you.
So, yeah, I'm rationing the cream eggs at the moment.
If you do kill Sean over a cream egg, can I cover it on this podcast?
Yeah.
Good. Just checking. If you want to go on a proper binge, there's a two-part Inside Hotel Chocolat thing. They've actually got a hotel. It's in the Caribbean. I think it might be St. Lucia. And they've got this stunning luxury hotel there, and it looks amazing. Not that any of us will be going to any hotel anytime soon, but if I win some money, it'd be amazing to go there.
And it's actually a Hotel Chocolat hotel.
It is, yeah. And their restaurant, it's less weird than it sounds when they explained it. Every dish contains something from the cacao plant. It contains something from them. But it's not all chocolate, so it might be that they've used part of the shell and put it through something, or do you know what I mean? It's not all sweet and chocolate tasting. But yeah, it looks stunning.
That sounds amazing, because Hotel Chocolat is absolutely beautiful. So when Sean and I first started going out, he bought me this really fancy Hotel Chocolat Easter egg. And it was like a really thick chocolate shell. And then inside it had all these little eggs that had different fillings in them. It was unbelievable. So I basically said, now you've set a precedent. But this year, I said to Sean, don't have to get me a Hotel Chocolat egg. So he didn't get me anything.
No! That's not acceptable. I never got anything either.
I'll make sure that he makes up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I bought so much reduced chocolate. Those bags of the enchanted egg, it would be rude not to buy however many I bought of them, which I'm not willing to state.
Basically now there's just a drawer in our fridge that's full of Cadbury's cream eggs and Cadbury's caramel eggs. And I'm perfectly okay with that.
That's the way life should be. I feel it's the only way to get us through quarantine.
You've been listening to Murder, She Spoke. I'm Joanna Shanks.
And I'm Emma Taylor.
And you can reach us on our email address at info@murdershespoke.net, or you can reach us on Instagram at murdershespokepod.
Or you can find us on Twitter at MSS_pod.